The Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129 presents America This Week, a smart Catholic take on faith and culture with Father Matt Malone and Kerry Weber.
Good day and welcome to the broadcast. I'm Father Matt Malone, Editor-in-Chief of America Magazine.
And I'm Kerry Weber, and each week we offer you the news and analysis from the intersection of the church and the world, gathered by our team at America Magazine.
And one of our team joins us here in the studio, Jim Keane, who is senior editor at America. Jim, nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Kerry. It's good to be here.
Indeed. And we have here with us to talk about Jesuit education today, Father Michael McCarthy, who is vice president for mission, integration, and planning, and an associate professor of theology at Fordham University here in New York City. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Kerry.
Now, your article for us is called The Uncertain Future of Jesuit Education, and you tie the Jesuit educational institutions into dystopian literature, which is maybe not a natural connection for most people, but can you tell us how you came to bring those things together?
Sure. It is kind of natural if you are in higher education.
All right.
Because if you read the literature on higher education, either in the Chronicle of Higher Education or in fact in, you know, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, et cetera, there is this sense, this great concern that higher education is really broken. Mm. And that I think most institutions are concerned that not all of them are going to be able to make it, and so I was watching on Netflix this dystopic show, Altered Carbon, and I thought, you know what, there is an analogous genre of dystopian literature that is very much prevalent in the world of higher education. So that's how I came to it.
Well, I think a lot of people think of colleges and universities as these sort of everlasting, you know, ivory towers set in literal stone, right, that will just go on and on forever and always be these wonderful places for learning. And it's gotten a lot more complicated these days. I wonder, can you tell us a little bit how the approach to higher education is sort of changing to make it so?
Sure. Well, I think there's a basic economic concern, right, that particularly for private institutions, they rely, you know, significantly on tuition. And in order to keep everything running at a university, from professors to all of the infrastructure to even things like, that might not have been so prevalent 40, 50 years ago, such as psychological services for students, all of that is really quite costly. And so as a result, tuition has gone up. And so there's this great question as to whether this is sustainable business-wise. And in some places, you know, if a place has a huge endowment, it's easier to run. But I think there is a great concern, just the fiscal reality is problematic. I also think, too, that increasingly the American public, which has always thought that it was great for for young people to go to college, it's not necessarily a given that the vast majority of Americans think that college is worth it.
Right.
And you also say here, Nimick, that this is taking place in the context of a larger shift. And you write, as smart, generous, and hardworking as they are, there is a deep vulnerability and a habitual distrust in the values and authorities that provided previous generations with confidence and direction. And you mention here a sense of citizenship and religious commitment, to name just two. And that sounds like a little bit like what we were talking about at the top of the hour, where the sort of traditional social or familial or communal supports have changed dramatically. But on the other hand, it also sounds very familiar to me. Like, one might have said this about my generation or the generation before that as well when we were 20 or 21 years old. So how is now really specifically different, do you
yeah,
think?
First of all, I would say students that I teach are by and large really fantastic. Mm-hmm. They are generous. They are smart. They want to lead good lives, and that really hasn't changed, right? And I find them also, too, spiritually hungry, right? That hasn't really changed. I think what has changed is their expectation that a message can be true. I co-teach a course with somebody who knows social media a lot, and one of the things that he told me is that a generation that has been raised with social media has been habituated to being suspicious. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of affects a lot, right? So if you're trying to talk about the religious values, if the default position is one of suspicion, it's just a lot harder for them to trust. Mm-hmm. And I think too that there is most of the evidence suggests that anxiety is just, the psychological reality of anxiety has become very, very high among college students these days.
Why is that, do you think?
I don't know. I wish I knew the answer to that question. Right. I don't know why.
I wonder if it's related, and I don't know either, but I wonder if it's somehow related to our being immersed in this ocean of information from the moment we wake up to the moment we go to sleep.
I suspect that's very much the case. And I suspect it's also the case that not all students feel a sense of belonging or a sense of community that does ground you as you face the things that you're frightened about.
And Father McCarthy, you mentioned in the article that Jesuit universities, there's 28 of them in the U.S., also face these questions. And you had a very good point. You said the business of Jesuit education can't be to stay in business. It has to offer something value added. It has to bring something special to the table. And luckily, that special thing is already mostly in place. It just has to be implemented.
Absolutely. I think the reason that I said that the business of Jesuit education can't be to stay in business is because, you know, if you are afraid about, if you are fearful of the future viability of a business operation, your focus can be, okay, how do we save this, right? How do we not go out of business? But I think, just speaking as a Jesuit, that is not the reason we have universities. That is not the reason that we have, I mean, insofar as a university is part of an apostolic vision of the Society of Jesus, it's not just all about staying in business. That it is about a particular mission and a particular vision of the future that we hold dear.
So how is that manifested? So if presuming that all other factors are equal, you know, what is this essential difference? What is this value added? What is the difference between, say, NYU and Fordham?
Well, I would say, one of the things that virtually all Jesuit universities or high schools or any institution will talk about, and here's a Latin term that might not sell very well, but it's cura personalis, mm-hmm. which is a sense of personal care for your students, and that what we hope in institutions of Jesuit learning is that they are cultures in which the attitude of care towards especially our students and to one another is so deep that is constitutive of our own self-understanding. And that's not to say that NYU doesn't care about its students.
Right.
It doesn't.
Right.
But I would say that ours is grounded in a deeper religious sense, that the student who sits in my class has been created by God. Now this is me thinking, right?
Right.
Has been created by God with an inherent dignity, and that my interaction with that student has to be one of consummate care, respect, and reverence.
Right.
And I do hope that is that's one of our distinctive characteristics.
And what's interesting about that is that those are all those presuppositions are all truth claims, right? You're making a sort of claim there to some objective reality, right? And So how does that then comes right up against what you were talking about earlier, right? Which is this general suspicion of those kinds of
claims. So what's interesting
is how do you navigate that?
So what's interesting is that I think there might be suspicion to my truth claim that every student who comes into my classroom is made in the image of God. So there might be so not everybody would buy into that, and there might be pushback against that. But what's curious is that even if there might be suspicion to the truth claims, the truth, not necessarily the claim, but the truth, is something that virtually all of my colleagues embrace.
Right.
That these students are worthy of our love and our care, and colleagues, you know, who not all of whom are religious, and we're very respectful of that. Their investment in cura personalis is really very deep too. So that the truth is something that is remarkably powerful and consistently shared. The claim is something that wouldn't necessarily be shared.
A lot of folks, obviously, when they head off to college, are thinking, how is what I learn in the next 4 years going to get me a job? Now, as an English major, I was not thinking about that as much, I think. But I was thinking, I like books. And I had genuinely no idea that this was considered like an impractical major. I was just like, this is you're supposed to do what you love in college. This is great. And so then when I got there and there were all these people, you know, like, I'm a marketing major. And I was like, oh, that sounds practical. Huh, that's interesting. You know, I saw the way in which there were a lot of different perceptions of like what your college major should be for. And you write about this in your article and say Jesuit colleges and universities need to sort of make a stronger case for themselves by more clearly aligning academic programming with the perceived career relevance. And so there's this sense of sort of cultivating that whole person with the understanding that that whole person at some point probably wants to be employed. How do you balance that out?
Yeah, and in that, you know, things have changed. You were an English major. I was a classics major, which is even even less employable. Although I've been gainfully employed.
Right. My sister was a philosophy major, and my brother was in American studies. So the three of us, my parents were very patient. Yeah.
So, but when I was at least going into college, my parents had this notion of what we want you to be is a well-rounded person, and that language had currency at the time.
Right.
Right, there was really a strong value in that, and the expectation was that you'd be okay, you'll get a job, you can be an English major, you can be a classics major, because you will be well rounded and you will be you will be able to argue, you will be able to use language well, you'll be able to work well with other people, you will be creative. And you will be confident in yourself.
And I think those things still apply.
They absolutely apply, right? They absolutely apply. But I think if you are a student, or if you are a parent, you know, who's being asked to invest a lot of money into an education, you are hyper aware of what the return on your investment is going to be. And so I think we can still make a very strong claim that all of these intellectual virtues that students get by being an English major are going to be very useful moving forward. But we need to kind of like draw the link to attend to the students or the parents' anxiety.
Well, and the challenge is that a lot of the anxiety is around student loans and debt. You know, like, so if you didn't get a job right away 30 years ago, it wasn't necessarily the same tragedy it could be for, you know, having collectors coming calling for those loan payments
Absolutely.
That it is today.
And that's an ethical question, I think, that most boards of trustees, not just at Jesuit institutions, but all private institutions are very, very aware of. There are reasons to be concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I know for myself, when I got out of college, I was lucky because I went on a scholarship, and I had no debt when I graduated, and that's a form of wealth. I mean, I was able to work in government, I was able to work at nonprofits because I didn't have those student loans, and so there is a way in which that debt works against our the thing that we encourage people to do, which is to give back to the community, to perform public service, which is not usually as remunerative. But there is a I was having a conversation the other night with somebody who works at an investment bank here in New York, and he was saying to me, you know, when we hire somebody to work at this investment bank and to work with our clients, that's exactly what we're looking for. We're looking for a well-rounded person. I said, you know, we know about banking. We know about finance. We're not hiring somebody from the Gabelli School because they know about finance, right? You know, that's important that they have that training, but they be a well-rounded person. You want them to be able to talk about history, and you want them to be able to talk about politics in a sophisticated way and so forth, then, or to ask critical questions, right? That's in a sense, doesn't really matter what major you are. If you are that well-rounded person, if you are a true humanist, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. And we still hear that from employers, right? We still hear that what employers want are people who have a strong work ethic, who can work well in teams, and who are good at communication. Like, those are and creative, right? I think what may have changed a little bit, you know, and before I worked at Fordham, I worked at another university on the West Coast, and I said this to students. I said, you know, all of these people that we have on the board of trustees, they say you are exactly what they want, and the students rightfully said, well, that's true. They want that in their management team, right? But to get in the door of a Silicon
right,
Valley
right,
company, right. You know, they want to see your engineering degree. So I think
yeah.
it's somewhat incumbent upon companies
right.
to have a little longer vision, right? So that students who don't necessarily have the exact technical skill that they need at this particular moment still have a chance, because they will be very valuable to them in the end.
Right, and this is sort of a Silicon Valley joke from the past, is that Carly Fiorina, who was the CEO of Hewlett Packard, her college degree is in medieval history.
Right.
Not only did it not make any difference, it benefited her. It helped her move into that position.
Absolutely. Hmm. And when you talk to successful people in companies in whatever coast or in the Midwest, most of them have had really wonderful broad educations, right?
Yeah. I had someone who is a subscriber to the magazine in Washington, and he had worked for 30 years on Capitol Hill in politics and public policy. And so they're always sending him these students from Jesuit schools and Jesuit colleges, because he went to BC. And he says, what do you major in? And they say, political science. And he says, get out. It's not a science. Study philosophy. He said, I use it every day. But, you know, there is also something distinctive about the privilege that, say, philosophy and theology enjoy in a Catholic or Jesuit university, isn't there? Isn't
yeah.
that a part of that identity?
Yeah, so one of the things most virtually every Jesuit university in the country has core requirements that all students have to take, and very frequently, I mean, I presume, certainly in the institutions that I have been affiliated with, yeah, some of the courses you have to take are in philosophy and theology, really to ask bigger questions. And increasingly, ethics is required of everyone, although I think it's important to recognize that ethics is not simply following a system. It's being formed to be a particular kind of person or a particular character that I think is part of the whole education. But yeah, philosophy and theology remain very important.
Yeah. I was really grateful to have had a core curriculum in college, because I know that there are courses that I would not have taken or learned about, because not even that I didn't like them or found them dull, but that I didn't know that was a thing that you were supposed to study or could study, or what, you know, what that really meant to study it. And I think it's just a real strength of colleges that really help to build up that whole person. And one of the things that Jesuit universities or any institutions talk about a lot is the magis, the more, right? And you write about that in your piece, because often when you hear about it, It seems to be a useful like marketing term or something. We're doing more. We're striving for more. We're reaching for more. And you compare it to sort of like the Olympic motto of sorts. But I really like the way in which you sort of drill down into what the core of this word actually means. Can you explain that a bit?
Yeah. So as I say in the article, I suspect that every Jesuit institution, certainly in the United States, uses this Latin term magis, right? Which is all it is. It's an adverb in Latin, meaning more. Mm-hmm. But for most Jesuits, it kind of drives us crazy, right? because members of marketing teams or trustees say, hey, this is great. Yeah, we're about more. We're kind of like about being bigger and better. And whereas in fact, in its original context, and there's no one specific place that Ignatius says this is what magis means. But it is a general approach that being aware that you have to make choices between goods. Hmm. You look for that which is more conducive to the end for which we are created. Now, for personally, that's directly out of the spiritual exercises. It drives me crazy a little bit that marketing teams latch on to this word. And what we don't see is that this is this comes out of a basic criterion for choice of what we do and setting priorities.
It's a method of discernment.
It's a method of discernment,
right? Which
yeah.
is something Pope Francis is always talking about. You know, we have about 2 minutes left, and I want to get to this question that you posed toward the end of the piece. Father Joe O'Hare asked it 20 years ago. He, of course, was the 10th editor in chief of America Magazine, and I think president of Fordham University
for
as well.
For a year.
But the question is, what are the odds of Jesuit higher education surviving in America?
Yeah, that is a tough question. And again, this gets back to the age of anxiety. I think there are concerns that a lot of colleges and universities, not just Jesuit colleges and universities, won't be able to sustain themselves moving forward. And what I liked about Father O'Hare's piece 20 years ago was he said, you know, if we are going to survive, we have to be grounded in the exercises. I would say that it depends on about three things. One, it depends upon, you know, whether we survive. Depends on good decisions now. Mm-hmm. Those decisions are made by, I would say, three sets of agents. Number one, boards of trustees. Number two, faculties. And number three, I would say the Society of Jesus, and particularly the leadership of the Society of Jesus. It depends on trustees understanding what this distinctive mission is. It depends on faculties who come from all kinds of different backgrounds embracing it. And it comes down to, you know, Jesuits deciding where they really do need to be most and what is going to be more conducive to the ends for which we as a Society of Jesus were created. And we don't have the numbers of Jesuits that we did 50 years ago. Mm. So I think that Jesuits are going to have to make choices for themselves.
Yeah. So essentially it comes down to that discernment we were just talking about.
Mm. Absolutely.
And, each of us needs to do it in a way that is proper to our vocation and to how God calls us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mick McCarthy, thank you very much for being with us. The piece is called The Uncertain Future of Jesuit Education. You can find it at www.americamagazine.org/serious. You can also find all of the content that we've been talking about today at that address, including our ongoing coverage of the Synod of Bishops on Young Adults by this piece by Leonard De Lorenzo, Four Lessons from Mary for the Synod on Young Adults. That person has written for us before, haven't they?
He works at the University of Our Lady, so it's appropriate that he wrote about Mary's influence.
So he's on message.
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right, that's fair enough. Yeah, because I thought
that is Father McCarthy's alma mater.
It was indeed.
Oh, is that right? Really?
The Jesuits don't like to acknowledge that. But I did go to Notre Dame.
And I went to a Dominican school. So
you notice he's telling us that at the end of the show.
Uh-huh.
After he's just talked about Jesuit education.
The uncertain future of Holy Cross education.
Exactly. You can also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. And to subscribe to America, call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. For Carrie Weber and Jim Keane, I'm Father Matt Malone. Thank you and good day.